across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's Tuesday, June 27th, National Sunglasses Day, which I'm not currently wearing, being indoors and all. Plus, it's a little smoky, hazy. It's not that terribly bright out there, but still, if you got them, wear them. Coming up this hour, the people who make June Dairy Month happen. It's not just the cows and not just the farmers and the milk truck drivers and the processors, but also a group of people whose efforts have to be done in the shadows because of the legal gridlock that has taken hold of Washington, D.C. And we will talk to Tony Gonzalez and Hans Breitenmoser about that coming up at 7:30. Then at 7:50, we will talk to Mark Thompson, who wears two hats around here. He's an attorney who's also a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I mentioned the commission's made up of three Democrats and three Republicans. He is one of the Democratic appointed members. But he's also a radio talk show host right here on Civic Media on Monday evenings at 7 o'clock. He hosts a show called The Paul Revere Show because he's trying to warn people of some of the coming threats to our country. And Mark will join us to talk a bit about the show and the Elections Commission and things that he can say to us about, you know, things in the news. That's coming up at about 7:50 this morning. If you missed it last hour, we did talk about how the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Megan Wolf, risks not being reappointed when her term expires at the end of this month, and some of the gridlock politics that could come into play for the State Elections Commission. If you missed the show, you can catch it later as a podcast over at Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcast, or head over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, where you can see all the shows. And you can listen back to past episodes as well. Our studio line here is 844-967-2789. And the email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. All right. The economy is going to get some new lingo. And it's going to be known as Bidenomics. And there's a reason for that. Bidenomics, in the minds of the people in the White House, has been delivering for people. It is a result of investments that have been made in the middle class and in infrastructure. And the most recent example of that happened to come just yesterday when we learned that Wisconsin was going to get $1.1 billion in expanded high-speed internet funding, something that will extend high-speed internet to everyone in the state as part of a national announcement by the Biden administration, announcing that $42 billion will go to states and territories over the next couple of years. This is all part of the bipartisan infrastructure law, and it really reflects a national realization during the COVID pandemic that broadband is a modern-day necessity for education, for business, for domestic life as well. I sat in on a news conference yesterday with Senator Tammy Baldwin and Congressman Mark Pocan, where they talked about what was coming to Wisconsin. Senator Baldwin noted that, you know, no matter where you live in the state, you deserve access to reliable high-speed broadband, and this $1 billion will do just that. And Baldwin went on to say that Wisconsin's getting more than originally expected because she badgered the FCC. See what I did there? Actually, she did it. She put it in her press release. She badgered the Federal Communications Commission into updating their map of Wisconsin broadband internet availability. And the resulting corrections led to more funding to connect people and businesses to high-speed service. Baldwin says about 650,000 Wisconsinites lack access to broadband, and that leaving them behind in the digital divide is unacceptable. And Congressman Pocan noted that high-speed internet access is no longer a luxury. It's a requirement. Nearly everything in the business and education and healthcare worlds requires access to the internet. And he notes that this will create lots of good-paying jobs across the state and make access to the internet a reality for all Wisconsinites. And also at the news conference was White House Infrastructure Coordinator Mitch Landrieu, who said the announcement makes for the largest ever investment in broadband service. And he and other administration officials, you know, liken it to the rural electrification push of the 1930s. When that push began, around 90% of America's farm families had no electricity in their homes and barns. And Landreau noted the expansion is going to be especially helpful in rural Wisconsin as more farmers are using precision agriculture, which relies on field sensors, and those field sensors need to upload data in real time. And of course, you know that we've told you a few times on the show here, Governor Evers proposed another $750 million to basically help finish the job, use that from the state surplus. But Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee changed that to zero, saying, well, the money's already here from the federal government. We're getting the federal money. We don't need state money, which is interesting because that's completely the opposite of their argument on why they haven't expanded Medicaid. They've said, well, we don't know if the federal money's going to be there. It's been there. It's been there for a decade. And yet somehow they're able to turn it around now and say, well, there is federal money there. And so therefore, we don't have to do our part anymore. So we can see who's doing the heavy lifting when it comes to investing in infrastructure and investing in the middle class here in Wisconsin and around the country. We'll get our weatherology forecast and a check on sports next. You're up north. Otherwise known as Captain Kangaroo, was born this day, 1927, passed away in 2004, but started the morning for generations of kids, this kid included, who always had to watch the antics with him and Mr. Moose and Bunny Rabbit and Mr. Green Jeans, and what we would give to have something that gentle and educational on our TVs nowadays instead. All right, well, we've noticed a few times here just how the smoke and haze has returned once again from the Canadian wildfires. But at the same time, the temperatures could not be more pleasant. Great sleeping weather last night. So if you're not somebody who has those respiratory difficulties, then it's okay. But again, if you are one of those folks, you need to pay careful attention. And Jennifer Wojcicki is here from Weatherology to tell us more about the forecast for the state of Wisconsin now. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. And yeah, as you mentioned, that smoke is lingering around. So there is an air quality alert for the entire state today. Smoke coming in from the Canadian wildfires, as you mentioned, with the heaviest smoke in the eastern half of the state from this afternoon through tomorrow afternoon. So that'll affect areas around Oshkosh, Waukesha, and Milwaukee. But the entire state will see that smoke or haze for the next few days. The air quality is ranging from unhealthy to very unhealthy and poses particular issues for people with respiratory issues, heart disease, children, and older adults. So prolonged outdoor activity isn't advised. Beyond that, it does look like sunny skies expected today. Highs in the mid to upper 70s from Wausau down to Madison and over to the lakefront. Low to mid 80s for the western half of the state. Chances for showers and storms comes in late tonight around Amory and Baldwin, and then continues as a chance for there for tomorrow during the day. Then showers and storms developing during the day into central and south central Wisconsin. Then in the evening for the eastern half of the state. It does look like a marginal risk for severe weather for tomorrow around Richland Center, and a slight risk for Amory and Baldwin. So definitely something we'll keep you posted on tomorrow. Temperatures tomorrow pretty similar to today. Thursday, warmer across the board in the 80s for most, a few spots around 90, Madison over to Richland Center. Slight chance for showers and storms for western Wisconsin, a higher chance for central, south central and eastern Wisconsin tomorrow, with a marginal risk for severe weather from Madison to the lakefront and up to Oshkosh. So again, something else that we'll keep you informed in on Thursday. Friday looks like another chance for showers and storms for everyone, highs in the 80s, and a sneak peek into the weekend. It looks like at least a slight chance for rain on Saturday for everyone as well, highs in the 80s for most, 70s closer to Lake Michigan.
And of course, Jennifer and her team keep you updated throughout the day. Every hour you'll get a little forecast update, and every so often one of them, like Jennifer, will appear here live with us to give us more details. Jennifer, we appreciate it so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
All right, now in sports, the first place Brewers. Yes, the first place Milwaukee Brewers. Our winners last night against the New York Mets, a nice 2-1 road victory after Joey Weimer hit a go-ahead 2-run homer to the center field in the sixth inning. The pitchers really got things done. Starter Colin Ray retired the first 8 batters. He allowed only 1 run and went 6 1/3 innings. Devin Williams got his 14th save in 15 chances. The relievers retired the final 11 Mets in order. And on just 34 pitches, Colin Ray's 6 1/3 innings was his longest starting stint. And the Brewers offense could have done a little bit more. They did just enough thanks to Joey Weimer's home run, but they did also strand 8 runners. And normally that's a death sentence when you're taking on somebody like Justin Verlander, who gave up 5 hits and struck out 5 during the game. They'll play again early this evening. Listeners of Civic Media radio stations can hear the Brewers on 2 of our stations in the Richland Center area. You can hear them on WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM. And in the Fox Valley, listen to Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 and 1100 AM as well. Mark's calling in Prairie du Sac. We were talking about Captain Kangaroo earlier, and I'm guessing, Mark, you have some, I'm hoping you have some fond memories of Captain Kangaroo you want to share. Well,
I have fond memories, and I don't know if you remember, this may have been earlier in the show, but that little line-drawing cartoon called Tom Terrific.
Oh, yes, I remember Tom Terrific,
His dog, Mighty Manfred, is the Wonder Dog, and his nemesis was Krabby Appleton. And old Krabby's little song was, "My name is Krabby Appleton, I'm rotten to the core. Each day I do a bad deed, maybe 3 or 4. So, I mean, that's a... kind of some of the Republican crowd in a nutshell, as it were, and it's just thanks for the memory this morning, because I say I have fond memories of Captain Kangaroo and Mr. Green Jeans and Mr. Mm-hmm. Moose and Bunny Rabbit. It was a fun show for a kid, and back in a far more innocent time.
It really was.
Thanks for talking about.
It was, and you know what else they had, Mark, was they had local shows. Now, as folks know, I grew up, you know, mostly in the Twin Cities. I kind of bounced back and forth between the Twin Cities and Eau Claire because of parents in each one. But, you know, yep. In Eau Claire, they had Sheriff Bob Dawson had an afternoon show. I know in the Twin Cities, we had, you know, Clancy and Willie, and you had Casey Jones. I'm sure other folks would want to call in and talk about their own local childhood TV shows. And Mark, I'm sure along with Captain Kangaroo, I'm sure plenty of people have examples of shows that remind them of a simpler time.
Yeah, and thanks for talking about the REA as well, that when my grandfather moved the family to the shores of Lake Superior during the Depression, I carved out a home basically just a few hundred yards from Lake Superior, that he had the house all wired for electricity, but they didn't have electricity hooked up to the grid until the REA came through. And that mm-hmm. he had a generator set up so they had temporary electricity when they, you know, for a few hours a day, but it was a blessing to the northern rural and southern rural areas of the country. And that was
well,
the government
exactly.
taking action. So.
And if it was just left to the private, you know, sector, the for-profit sector, you might still be waiting for electricity in areas like that, I think.
You bet.
All right, Mark. Thanks so much. Yeah, have a great day.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Yeah. So we raised a couple of interesting topics there, and we'll come back to, you know, REA and broadband and, you know, why there are some things that are so big. You lead with the funds that you and I pay in taxes and invest that in the middle class. But the other topic, I think we're just going to stick on this for just a minute. And that means I'm going to have to give Aaron a pop quiz here in a second. But when I mentioned Captain Kangaroo and I mentioned the local shows, and again, I grew up over on the western side of the state. So if you're listening over on the eastern part, either from the, you know, the Milwaukee TV market, the Green Bay TV market, the Madison area, what were the local kids shows when you were growing up, and what fond memories do you have? 844-967-2789. And I mentioned Sheriff Bob in Eau Claire because long after he, you know, took off the cowboy outfit and the show went away, he would still wander in to TV 13 we'd be sitting in the newsroom, you know, putting together our show. And, you know, it's basically like he had a lifetime pass, you know, to come in the building and, you know, just get to know everybody, talk to them, share some stories. We always had stories for him. Say, oh, I talked to somebody who, you know, you interviewed him when he was 8 years old, when he, you know, won the Lucky 13 fishing contest that week or something like that. Everybody remembered, you know, that Peter's Wieners was a sponsor, and that the kids would get their hot dog, their chocolate milk. There'd be live commercials for bunny bread and things like that. There was also, though, when we talk about the live commercials, how I wish I could play back some of the stories that the old timers would tell me. Because when I think about Peter's Meats, and I believe it was Peter's Meats, it could have been Schweigert, but they were doing a live commercial during a newscast. Because you did a lot of live commercials back then during your local newscasts. And in one case, the weather guy was doing the commercial, and, you know, the news guy and the sports guy were off camera, and one of them took one of these ring bolognese, stuffed it through his pants, out the zipper. The other guy grabs a pair of hedge clippers and clips the ring sausage. And the poor guy doing the commercial on camera is seeing all this behind the camera, but can't let on as to what's happening as he's doing the live commercial. And when I heard that story, we were working on the 50th anniversary for TV 13 at the time. I told my bosses I would do anything to bring back live commercials. That would have been just so fun to do again. Now, again, in this era, you know, they don't want you necessarily mixing news and live reads, but boy, those were some good times back then. Dick in Madison, I think, is calling in with a little bit about kids shows. Dick, good morning.
Good morning. Anybody over 60-ish, say, in Madison, there was a stupid show called Circus 3, Cowboy Eddie, and the ventriloquist, I forget his name now, he was amongst the worst. I was on the show when I was in about third grade for a birthday party. This guy, he was absolutely terrible, and the show was on forever. It was late afternoon after school, and then they'd show cartoons, and you got yourself a malted milk from McDonald's. But Howie Olson, that was the guy's name. He was absolutely awful.
But, you know, back then, it's whatever fills the time, you know? Oh, that's a fun memory. All right. Well, Dick, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sure you tripped a lot of memories back then. So thanks for the call on that. Ellen's calling from Kenosha on Kids Shows. Ellen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Really good, thanks. Thank you for calling in. What do you want to tell us about for kids shows when you were growing up?
I want to talk about the Bozo Show, between Milwaukee and Chicago. We got a lot of the Chicago stations, and it was Bozo the Clown with Mr. Ned the ringleader, and they had games. They had little skits that were funny, but had a kid-centered message. And it was on through the years several times during the day, really early in the morning and then at lunchtime. And I think it may have even at one point switched to after school. But it was a favorite. And we all talk about the game. They had buckets, and the kids, they had a live audience, so kids could toss little balls and win prizes in the buckets.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm 70, and people my age still talk about watching the Bozo Show.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's nationally known. And, you know, then there were some other national shows like Romper Room and Wonderama with Bob McAllister and things like that. Those were good times. They like Dick was saying, not only is the best, you know, quality shows, but they were still good shows. They were good for the kids. Well, thanks, Ellen. Yeah. I appreciate the call. Have a wonderful day.
Okay. You too. Thanks so much
for listening. Now, Aaron, you're getting to hear all these stories about, you know, life in a simpler time. And now it's like all, you know, cartoons on Nickelodeon and Disney and, you know, of varying levels of sassiness and I don't know, borderline violence, it seems. And I just wonder if when you think back now, was there a classic kid show that, you know, stays close to you, or do you feel like you kind of missed out?
I don't know if there's any like local things, but I definitely watched a lot of stuff like Sesame Street or Between the Lions. which is just a show about a bunch of lion puppets in a library and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So there, it's not all cartoon violence and adult jokes and everything.
That's good.
Just a lot of that, though.
Well, I was going to say, my 4-year-old grandson, his favorite thing on Netflix is a cartoon called Trash Truck, you know, a cartoon yep. about a garbage truck. So, you know, how times have changed. Tony Gonzalez and Hans Breitenmoser are going to join us next to talk about immigrant labor on the farm and June Dairy Month. That's next. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlum.
And we're going to talk to Hans Breitenmoser, as we do every couple of weeks or so, about things that are happening in the rural economy, on the farms, some of the issues, some of them agricultural, some of them political, some of them dealing with the climate. And this time around, as we start to wrap up June Dairy Month, we thought we would take a little bit of time to talk about the people working on the dairy farms across the state. Now, some folks have been farming the land for generations, like the family that I married into. Others, like Hans, have been there for, what, I guess one generation, Hans, is what we'll call you. And then there are folks who aren't the people who own the farm necessarily, but are so very vital to its continued operation as farming gets larger and more complex. And so we'll be talking to Tony Gonzalez about that in just a minute. Hans, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Pat. Your earlier segment reminded me of all those shows, and suddenly I realized why I thought I, you know, recognized you when I first met you, because it's that Captain Kangaroo vibe that you have.
So. I do. I just kind of give off that children's host thing.
I mean that in a good way, but
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do, Hans. So for June Dairy Month, I mean, do people have to be like extra nice to you? How does Dairy Absolutely. Month work?
Absolutely. That is, I think that's actually in the state constitution or something about that. There has to be kindness given to all dairy farmers, and free drinks every time you walk in the bar.
That's it. Okay. Well, I guess I'll have to find a nearby supper club and try to make good on that. Now, you rightly noted that before we move on from June Dairy Month is to tip our hat not just to the farmers and the processors, the truck drivers, everything else, but certainly the folks who are workers here, many of them from Mexico and other places. And so we wanted to talk to Tony Gonzalez, who now is the Wisconsin director for the American Business Immigration Coalition. But Hans, before we turn to Tony, you know, just give me your perspective on why you think that that's something that should be recognized before June Dairy Month, you know, runs off the calendar.
Well, again, I think June Dairy Month has been, you know, it's been around for eons, of course, and it's a way that we can sort of celebrate the dairy industry here in Wisconsin, because it's, you know, very important to the Wisconsin economy and just socially, you know, this kind of social fabric. But what a lot of people don't realize, I think what most consumers and most folks don't realize, is that there's a huge immigrant labor component to this. Most of the folks that work on Wisconsin dairy farms are immigrants. And I think that just that's well known inside the dairy industry, but I don't think it's very well known outside the dairy industry. And I think it's just important to, as you said, tip our hats to all the people that make it possible that we can, you know, sort of take for granted. We go to the grocery stores and we get, you know, a variety of cheeses and butter and all the yummy things that we get to take advantage of and consume at a reasonable cost by comparison to a lot of other places. Happens largely because we've got a lot of immigrants coming to this country working in this industry. So I just, on our farm here, we've had people from other countries working here for probably 25 years. And I'm here to tell you that my farm would not run, and the dairy industry in Wisconsin simply would not run without immigrant labor. We've got a lot of farms in Wisconsin still that are small enough where they don't have a lot of you know, hired labor. But the reality is that we've got a lot of farms who have hired labor, and without that hired labor, it just doesn't work. So our hats off to our immigrant friends for keeping this industry moving.
I want to seize on two words that you use there, reasonable cost, because one thing that Americans, I think, by and large, take for granted is that we have some of the lowest food prices in the world in terms of a, you know, a share of household income that goes to your groceries. And, you know, that's not entirely by accident that it is, you know, migrant labor that is performing that task and at a rate that allows American groceries to maintain the price that they have. But it comes at a cost. It comes at a cost to the workers and to the political system. And so for that, let's turn to Tony Gonzalez from the American Business Immigration Coalition. Tony, good morning. Thanks for joining us again.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me on your show once again. Thank you.
Well, you've heard Hans, you've heard me talk about this, and I want it to be more than platitudes. So I want to put it this way. There's been some extra attention. We've talked to Ruth Conniff about her book, Milked. We've talked to you previously about the issue of driver's licenses. Is there any sense over the past, I don't know, year or so from farm migrant laborers that they are maybe better recognized or better appreciated than they were in years past? Or would you say that they kind of feel like they're still getting the same treatment and maybe lack of respect that they've had since they first started working on Wisconsin farms?
Sure. It's kind of a mix of that. I mean, it should be better. It could be better. But we can't deny that there has been at least some kind of progress. More in the acknowledgement that these workers are here in the state. Okay, as far as better treatment and better opportunities and a path to not necessarily, we always like saying path to citizenship, but not everybody. And Hans will probably back me up on this. Not everybody that comes necessarily wants to become a citizen. They want to come. They want to work. They want to pay their taxes and be able to go back home to their families. So I would call it more a path of normalization of their status so they can go and live like any of us do, go and drive your car when you want to, go to the school, go to the market and everything. So, there's been a little bit of, I think, more acknowledgement that the people are here. And that has come, at the cost of economy, actually. We don't know what you have until it's gone. And that's what's happening right here. We are losing a lot of immigrant labor in the farms. Farms, among many problems that they have, with low prices and economy. Also, with no doubt, the lack of workers is what we keep hearing all the time. And people are going to other states where, like Minnesota, just became the 19th state to have a driver's license. Down in Illinois also. So we're surrounded by states that are doing that. So that attracts people to get there, as well as, you see what's happening in Florida. People are leaving because of the fears that they have. And we don't want that to happen in Wisconsin. But, we got to give credit where credit is due. As you presented earlier, I'm working with the American Business Immigration Coalition, and we are advancing some policy down in Madison where we see interest from our legislators from both sides. Actually, a couple of Republican legislators have even taken up drafting bills. In this case, we're talking about DACA recipients to be able to join the police force in Wisconsin, and hopefully also, licensing for other stuff. But it's a path. I mean, we got to go slowly. I like to quote Ronald Reagan, not because of any political party, but more about the wisdom of the saying, if they give you a half a loaf of bread, take it and then come for some more. So we're starting to see that we're getting maybe a little bit more of that bread. And obviously economy is a big factor here, where we got to do something so we get these workers attracted here in Wisconsin, keep them here, and for them be part of our community.
Of all the things there, the path to normalization, I think, is what really sticks with me, because as we've noted in the past, not every migrant laborer is looking to leave their home behind and come here and is Sadly, some very ugly Americans will say, you know, they're ticker jobs. Like, no, they want to come and work and send money home and then go home. And the normalization would be the ability to go across the border back and forth at leisure rather than having to sneak across every time that they come up. It's something that is such a lose-lose situation. It's only exacerbated by right-wing politicians who can't stop talking about the southern border but aren't proposing any kind of a solution. And one of those solutions has been the notion of an agricultural visa that would be used year-round, not the kind that, you know, migrant laborers can come in and harvest crops, you know, for a short time every year, but this would be something year-round. That's having the darndest time passing in Washington because of some of these, you know, hardcore conservatives that, you know, are demanding so many other things in the way. And I wonder, Tony, if you see any reason. Well, I wouldn't see any reason to be optimistic in this current Congress because it's so divided, but do you maintain any optimism that a year-round agricultural visa is still an attainable goal at some point in the not too distant future?
I believe so, and I'm glad you asked that question. With ABIC, we are working on what it's going to be called. It's a state-sponsored visa. We're working with governors from all around the country and from business owners so that the federal government allows the state governments to sponsor some visas, you know, beyond the H-2A or H-2B or expand them, H-2-1 and H-2B. So that people can come work in the state with a sponsorship from the state. So I think that is gathering some momentum. I think people are, like, again, based on the need. I think that if we are able to continue, we have to break the funny enough, you got to work with politicians, but break the political sides on this whole thing and get some bipartisanship. What we're observing right now is, you know, on the right, many of them are concerned of, you know, just what you're saying. You know, how are we going to come and give workers here visas or a license if we're screaming on the border that how all these people coming across? Well, those are, you know, even though they're related, they're not tied together. You know, I mean, we need to let the federal government, we have to force the federal government to do something about the border. State-wise, our legislators are they don't have the authority to enforce immigration, but they have to look at what our economy, what is the greatest benefit for a state. And, I hate to bring it all in a matter of economy and money because we're talking about human beings, but if we have to talk about money and economy, well, we're going to do it. They are a big part. They need to see how their constituents are losing out. The farms are having to close, not just farms, businesses. And it's important that something gets done so that we can provide a way for these workers to be in our state in a manner that is, we're not going to say legal because against the federal government would have to do that. But in a manner in which they're safe, in which we know who's here, that they're free to report crimes to police also, that they can live like a normal citizen. And, it's a win-win for everybody. The farmers need it, our economy needs it, and these workers also deserve it.
Hans, from your standpoint up there in Lincoln County, I know we consistently hear the congressman from up there, you know, Tom Tiffany, can only seem to talk about, you know, the security aspects of it, that, in his mind, everybody that crosses the border is a criminal or a wannabe criminal. Hans, do you see any signs there closer to that territory that either Tiffany or the people around him can start to modify that language and, clear the path toward some kind of progress?
Well, I certainly hope so. And at the risk of sounding completely cynical, I think if Congressman Tiffany is interested in any higher office, I think that, you know, a statewide office is going to have to be moderated a little bit as well. And that's just the politically cynical version. In a gerrymandered district like the 7th, of course, you play to your base. And so what he truly believes in his heart might be different, you know, I hope. I don't know. But as Tony said, you know, the we inside the state of Wisconsin, we deal with the situation at hand that the federal government has given to us in terms of what border policy is. That's the that's what we deal with here inside the state, and hopefully, you know, our representatives in Washington can keep working on the things that are outside of our control, but in the hands of those in Washington.
Here's hoping that they do. Hans Breitenmoser, Tony Gonzalez, thank you so much for visiting with us, Tony. I look forward to our next chat. And again, a happy June Dairy Month to you as well. Thanks for all you do. Have a great day.
You bet. Thanks.
We will be back with Mark Thompson. Thank you very much. Thanks, guys. Back with Mark Thompson from the Wisconsin Elections Commission and the Paul Revere Show, heard on this radio station. We'll be back. You're up north. Now, normally in this slot, you would hear from Chad Holmes of the Chad Holmes Show on Bull Falls Radio. But Chad is off. He's been posting on social media from Las Vegas, where basically a week from now when he's back, I'm going to be saying, how did I not know that you love taking part in World Series of Poker tournaments? And that's one of the things that he was doing over the weekend. So we're going to learn more about that side of Chad Holmes that I never knew existed until I started seeing some of his posts. But thankfully, we have a very capable pinch hitter, also a host of one of the Civic Media shows, this one on Monday nights, the Paul Revere Show with attorney Mark Thompson, also a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And he joins us from Milwaukee. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you up there in beautiful
Chippewa Falls? Yeah, it's good. It's always another beautiful day on the lake, as I like to say. We have to get you up here for no other reason that I know you and I have the same friend, Dana Walks, and would love to just get the two of you on the pontoon up here and let you two tell stories. I'll just drive the boat. You two just tell stories all day.
I think that would be a really good one, but you're going to have to find us some good beer. I hear you have some of that up there.
We might have a little bit here. I even know Dana's favorite, so I can pick all that up too. So obviously we have many different hats here, but since we use this time of the program to tell people more about the many shows on Civic Media, and we've had you on once before, but it was quite a ways back. So tell folks about your show, Monday evenings, the Paul Revere Show, what you base it on.
You know, Pat, I think we've been on for a little over a year, and it was really, the whole concept was, how do we keep Wisconsin moving forward? And, you know, the theme, the Paul Revere Show, it's the famous poem by Longfellow, and I didn't really know the history of it, and I found out it was written at the time the South seceded. And it was written to rally the North against slavery and for democracy and the abolitionist cause. And I thought, truly, truly, that's what Wisconsin needed. Right here in the middle of a state where we're gerrymandered, rigged. And, you know, if you've been watching the whole last few weeks, we've seen the leadership in the Republican Party attack and try to divide the state and really attack the minority communities in my community, Milwaukee. So we have tried to focus on how to keep moving forward. And, you know, last night, Luann Bird, who was out there active, bird on a wire, trying to change the 84th Assembly District for the future once we get new maps. And Marcelia Nicholson, who is the chairwoman of the county board, who's going to be coming up and, you know, making some important votes on what Milwaukee County is going to do in response to the state action. So there's been a lot happening.
Oh, no doubt about that. And, you know, some of the things that are happening are rather close to you, which is, you know, we talked about when we first kicked off the show here, that you, as a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, there's a dust up that might affect the administrator of the commission, Megan Wolf. But before we even get to that, I want to take note of something, folks who have been listening to Mark here. The way the Wisconsin Elections Commission is set up, 3 Democratic appointed members, 3 Republican appointed members. It's pretty obvious Mark is one of the Democratic appointed members. And it's in my mind reminds me a lot of the Janet Protasiewicz campaign, is that you're going to know where my values are, but how we rule on individual things is based on the merits of what's before us. I've seen things come before the Elections Commission that are 3-3. I've seen things that are 6-0. Based on what you see in front of you, you know, whatever your values are, you have to decide the merits of what's right there. And one of the things that's going to be in front of you, like it or not, is the matter of what to do about who is the administrator of the commission office. As you know, Republicans seem to be targeting the current administrator, Megan Wolf, for being truthful about the safety and security of Wisconsin elections. What is it as a commission member that you can say about what you think needs to happen or what would be best for the Elections Commission and for Wisconsin elections going forward?
You know, I think the first jump off point is for all of us to recognize that Megan Wolf is one of the best, most competent election experts in the country. You know, she is the past president of the National Association of the State Election Directors. She's on the executive committee of the Elections Infrastructure Information and Analysis Center. She was a co-chair of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. You know, she has been in a virtually impossible time in huge partisan times, being a nonpartisan and being fair and accurate. I really hope that everybody reads and jumps on the Wisconsin Elections Commission webpage. Megan Wolf issued a press statement that she entitled, you know, setting the record straight, fact checks about Wisconsin election administration. Now, from my point of view, and I want to say this, Michael Haas was the prior administrator. I was the chair of the commission at the time. We voted 6-0 for him to run the elections. It went to the Senate and they did not confirm him. Then despite the fact that the Senate did not confirm him, you know, the commission voted again 4-2 with Bev Gill, a Republican, voting in favor of Michael Haas. And, you know, she voted that way because she, and this is my belief anyway, she believed in the integrity of merit and the integrity of the human being. And she thought Michael Haas got railroaded. I think the public needs to know that Megan Wolf is excellent for Wisconsin. And right now she is the administrator. And the way I read the law, there is no vacancy. And she should stay and remain as the administrator, you know, until there are four, you know, the law is that it takes 4 votes of the commission to remove her. I don't see that there is any indication of anyone wanting to remove her. And I would fully expect that she would continue to serve. I mean, that is my hope and my desire. And as I said, I don't remember what paper called me. It would be a complete shame and a travesty if she doesn't continue. We have a really, really significant elections coming up in 2024. She knows the clerks. She is competent. She is well-liked. She's efficient. You know, if Wisconsin really stands for moving forward, there is no reason why anybody should want her gone.
Sounds good. Mark, we're up against time, but I really appreciate that insight and hope folks will catch you on the Paul Revere Show Mondays at 7. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks so much. Take care, Pat.
Thank you. And we appreciate you being with us as well. You can follow me on Facebook at Pat Kreitlow Up North, all one word. Tomorrow, Doug Mell and our climate check as well. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.